My name is Chris Jordan, and welcome to another one of my thought-provoking progressive podcast series called Who's Out There? A belief system is what grounds our idealistic view of self-actualization through the course of this life, not only within our own internal battles, but within those we fight around us. Talking about religion with unlike-minded people is normally a cue for conflict. Literally standing up for what you believe in is a rite of passage. But are you defending or are you accepting? Why does there have to be an ultimatum drawn when sharing our spiritual practices? I myself am an Orthodox Christian, currently in the thick of really foundating my belief system. And while my journey continues, I want to continue to connect with the world and its people around me. So as this series grows, I will explore just exactly who's out there from varied spiritual baselines, asking the difficult questions and challenging these contexts in faith. And I hope you join and enjoy this experience with me. In this episode, I have an interesting sit down with practicing Satanist and representative of the South African Pagan Rights Alliance, Tristan Kapp, for a sit down between myself as a Christian and himself as a Satanist to see whether there is any common ground. Enjoy. When it's easy, we can point to the devil.
Absolutely, yeah. It's like Hansi Cronje, who in his 2004, when his cricket match, when he fixed the cricket match, he essentially said, "The devil made me do it." And essentially, that was a tad problematic due to the fact of how he was a Christian and there was the big mega church pastor Ray McCauley also involved in the whole debacle and defending his case, and the whole world, even the Afrikanerdom, sympathizing with him and essentially calling for his, you know, praying for him and what have you not, to encourage him in his spiritual journey whilst he couldn't accept responsibility for his own faults and essentially just fixed the match. So it's easier to blame the devil. And the same can be said for the Krugersdorp murders. Also, the group was said to be Satanists, essentially, whereas the group called themselves Electus Per Deus, a Christian cult fleeing from another Christian cult, and committing a bunch of murders just to get some insurance fraud and insurance money from the victims they murdered.
Sure.
So it's,
did they claim that it was...
Well, the media claimed it was Satanism, and it was Satan and related to Satan, etc. Yet the group called themselves Electus Per Deus, which is Latin for chosen by God.
Is that not... I mean, everything's debatable in life, truly. Where some people will say, yeah, but that could be just manipulation or deception or whatever it is. You know, again, when things are propagated in any one way, this is genuinely why, thank you, I want to have this interview. Do you speak to a lot of Christians?
I have a lot of Christian friends, yes.
How does that work?
It may seem, you know, quite weird to some individuals, but I'm not an intolerant person myself.
Are they not intolerant?
There are a lot of them who
but
there are a lot of them who have walked a journey with me throughout my entire life and know who I am as a person. And there are some people who have met me throughout my social media journey who are also Christian and have accepted the fact that, you know, they understand my heart and what I stand for, instead of trying to buy into the Kafkaesque dogma that the church teaches them about this malevolent entity, which isn't even biblical to begin with. And
let's quickly stop there for a second.
Yes.
Can you kind of just unpack that?
Oh, so the fact that Satan is not biblical. Okay, so let's dig a bit into the history of the Bible. So the Christian Old Testament was written in ancient Hebrew, and the Hebrew noun for an adversary is Satan or Hasatan, but you get different iterations of the Hebrew word in the ancient texts. You've got Hasatan, Lesatan, and Satan. They are spelt differently, but they refer individually to different archetypes per se. So the Lesatan essentially is a preposition referring to the or a Satan, whereas the Hasatan is a pronoun referring to a specific caricature. So in the Hebrew mythology, before Israel became monotheistic, which they weren't really per se, but or worshipping one god, essentially, for those who don't know what monotheistic means. Mm. Essentially, it comes down to the fact of that they worship multiple gods.
Okay.
And one of these, a couple of these gods were part of these pantheon. This pantheon was called the B'nai Elohim, or the sons of God, or the sons of El. So in the ancient texts of the Nag Hammadi scrolls or the Enochic tradition, they basically, it was basically a Gnostic tradition where these deities were all in a heavenly court, as that was how ancient mythology perceived the gods' realm, such as you can see examples of which in ancient Greek mythology or in the Roman mythology, for example, the Colosseum and etc.
And would this be happening in the
That would be perceived as heaven, but the concept of heaven and hell did not exist back then.
Okay.
That was a later development when the Greeks invaded and that cosmological duality along with Greek philosophy mixed.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, so the heavenly court was where all the gods debated and basically was the heavenly realm, essentially. And the big god, essentially, he was known in the Nag Hammadi scrolls as Yaldabaoth, and then later became known as Yahweh, or El, as the storm god, claimed that he was God. And the B'nai Elohim, one of the B'nai Elohim, was the adversary, or the advocate, or the justice guy who basically challenged everything. And that's basically what the term Satan means. It means accuser or adversary. And in that mythology, or that mythological construct, essentially, the term Satan or accuser was essentially in a justice court where you get, for example, the prosecutor who basically challenges the authority of the judge per se. And essentially that is where the term originates. And essentially later on, when the Persians invaded Israel, that narrative of the supreme adversary changed when that dualism aspect of good and evil started to syncretize with Jewish mythology.
Right.
And so the concept of God or Yahweh and Satan was born. And the idea of malevolent evil being a separate entity or a positional entity to the divine demiurge known as Yahweh became a solidified thing. And later on, if you follow early church theology, that aspect became immortalized as a sort of personification of evil, because the Persians distinguished in early Zoroastrianism, which is the oldest monotheistic faith, between good and evil, the good god being Ahura Mazda and the malevolent god being Angramenu. And essentially that concept of evil transliterated into a cosmological dualism known as Yahweh and Satan, and Christianity adopted that. And basically with other Gnostic literature and Gnostic influences, as well as other cultural influences, and the Roman Empire demonizing certain pagan belief systems essentially constructed this narrative of a supreme evil deity that is vociferously trying to attack Christians.
Okay, but the thing is, and again, I want to ask them very kind of like
go for it.
Basic
ask
questions, because that's what basically people think, you know, and want to kind of ask. So I'm nowhere on the level of your academic.
That's okay.
You know,
just pause me if you don't understand.
No. I'm following just fine. It's a lot of information. Because the obvious question, I mean, Satanist comes from Satan. So am I understanding that you don't? There isn't.
No,
a Beelzebub?
There's no Beelzebub. There's no Satan, because Beelzebub again. Comes from the Canaanite pantheon of where Baal Zebub was basically just an Aramaic or a Hebrew noun for Baal, which was a part of the Canaanite pantheon, along with Yahweh or El or Ashtoreth and Moloch, as well as the other deities mentioned in the Hebrew Old Testament.
So there's no worship to the devil?
No, none whatsoever. Yeah, so there's no worship of the devil. Rather, Satan as a construct is seen as a symbol for self-liberation and, you know, authority. As I've just explained, the advocate and the adversary, you know, standing in opposition and questioning authority. And that is essentially what the satanic construct resembles. It is a sort of, I wouldn't say quasi-religion, but it is a de facto religion basically employed to use certain religious privileges against those who use their religious privilege for evil, such as Christians, for example, who basically have freedom uncontrolled and basically can do whatever they want in the name of their God and get away with it. True. And so that construct of Satanism per se, I believe, started in America, was started to challenge that religious theocracy in where Christianity essentially, in a fundamentalist sense, has unbridled freedom, and where individuals just use it as a cop-out to defend their bigotry of, for example, discriminating against the LGBTQ community and other marginalized communities.
So does that mean it's an insinuation that that belief system is basically built on, like you say, human construct, nothing real?
I wouldn't say that. That would be an assumption and not what I said. What I merely implied is that the entire construct of deities or gods do not exist in the satanic framework. We're just basically atheists with dogma, using a sort of symbology or I would say framework to challenge de facto authority. And I've understood it in the sense of that if you don't shout, you are never listened to. an example I frequently use it or equate it with would be, for example, to see what happened during the apartheid government and how, you know, African people were basically robbed of their voices and their autonomy.
Yeah.
And the only way to gain the national parties and the governing authorities' attention was through acts of which now is perceived as terrorism. And essentially, basically vociferating your voice to a certain extent of how these people can't miss you, because in a sense of where you are automatically presumed to be inferior or automatically presumed to be a marginalized figure, there's no authority that would 100% listen to you or essentially give your voice credence in a conversation where there is a table and diplomatic discussion is encouraged, because that's not how society works. And essentially, it's basically the oppressed want to keep their, or the oppressors, essentially, if you want to construct such a narrative, are usually very greedy in terms of their power, and they don't want to encourage dissension because that would be a threat to their authority.
But that's the human construct.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. And that is where also the satanic narrative comes in where Satan is used to discredit a person before essentially they open their mouths. And that is frequently how Christianity has dealt with hereticism or individuals who dissent from the normative dogma, essentially calling them a witch or a Satan or a demonic possessed individual. And essentially I see Satanism as using that construct to one's individual benefit and forcing discussion and prying open discussion where discussion is essentially not allowed.
One last time, just for it to reiterate. No deities exist.
Deities, none whatsoever.
That's so odd.
Ideologically and religiously speaking, I don't believe in any deities. However, what basically unites Satanism and paganism, for example, is that we all form a part of the umbrella called the occult.
Okay.
So you've got the Abrahamic religions, and that is, for example, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity.
Right.
And they all fall under the umbrella of the Abrahamic religions. Then you've got the Vedic religions, which are Eastern in terms of the Buddhism and the Hinduism, for example. And they are different categories. And they've got different dogmas. For example, the Hindus don't share the beliefs of the Buddhists, even though they have a sort of correlation in between each other. Satanism, for example, owes a lot of its praxis and its ideology to ancient native pagan beliefs. But essentially, the construct of magic and the idea of self-enlightenment and the idea of, what do you call it, hedonism is also something that is quite prominent in paganism and in occult philosophies.
Yes. A lot of those, of that terminology, has negative connotations. So, for example, when we talk about a hidden, or talk about hedonistic behavior, I would say the world has very clearly painted extreme versions of hedonistic natures, you know. So we're looking at that very stereotypical thing of sacrifices and the kind of like that bloody side of stuff. Is there any truth to that?
Not at all. I mean, in ancient times, it was quite prominent for sacrifices to happen. But you see, it's interesting that people would paint the pagans and the Satanists with sacrifices, whereas that is filled in the Bible.
Yeah, that's what
you can see a lot of that in the Old Testament day factor, whereas none of the pagans I've ever encountered encourage or you know, promote the idea, never mind the praxis, of human or animal sacrifice whatsoever. There are some fringe groups, I believe, who practice things like blood magic and use the certain blood of animals, but it's not necessarily something that is widely recognized or practiced. and it's not something I'm very much familiar with or have the authority to speak over.
Sure, that's fine.
But the idea behind that is not to harm the individual, and it's usually used in most individuals. I've not frequently engaged with any individuals who do that, but again, they merely use it. Some individuals who do practice it use their own blood, for example, and that would be seen as obscene to a lot of people, but I mean, if you want to compare obscenity in an objective philosophical sense, the idea of Holy Communion, of using wine as a symbol for drinking blood and bread as a symbol for eating body, is cumulative to what one could perceive as cannibalism or ingesting bodily fluids, even if it is in a symbolic sense.
Can Satanism stand on its own without having it being quote-unquote defined by the presence or creation of Christianity?
Absolutely, yes. Okay. Satanism is in no way, shape, or form responsible or developed as a result or based on Christianity, rather. It's an ideological philosophy based in and of itself that is...
But, I mean, literally, if we look at the semantics, we've said that as time moved on, the more that Christianity became prominent, the more it was easier to define what satanic culture or satanic practices was, slash whatever it may be. What you're trying to say to me, or what you are saying to me, what I'm trying to understand is, as you practice Satanism, it is definitely about a focus of empowerment.
Yes.
Agreed?
Of the self.
Right? And... is it so much of empowerment of others? Like, is there that kind of community where you bond and support and kind of uplift and, you know, again, because...
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. There is definitely the communal aspect. I mean, even if you look at, for example, the Satanic Temple in the United States, they are one of the, I'd say, pioneering organizations that do a lot for the community in terms of human rights, in terms of accessibility to medical services such as abortions, and basically encouraging ceremonies where people can unbaptize themselves and basically deconstruct themselves from their previous religions. Okay. There's also the aspect of a huge part of the Satanic Temple, for example, is the Satanic Sober Faction, where they have created an immensely diverse community where former drug addicts can find community and sobriety.
Okay.
And it's not based on the 12-step program and acknowledging that you are powerless to your addiction. Rather, it's the aspect of empowering an individual to recognize that you are powerful and that you have the power to conquer the addiction through basically community and through a safety network through individuals that are going through the same, without shaming, without resorting to pseudoscience or quasi-religious doctrine to manipulate you, and basically, as I think it was Karl Marx referring Christianity or religion as the opiate of the masses, and basically in normative 12-step programs where religion is involved, it's basically, I perceive, replacing one opioid with another. And that's not essentially the purpose of it. And those individuals who get it right, I mean, it's all the power to them.
Sure.
The only difference with regard to Satanism in retrospect is rather to empower the individual in and of themselves, rather to force submission to an unreasonable tyrannical authority.
Okay. I get that. On that, I understand and also knowledgeable about evil.
They also have, for example, what they call the Satanic Temple in the US, for example, has what they call the After School Satan Club, where they basically just, they don't indoctrinate children. They just give them, for example, puzzles to do to empower critical thought,
okay,
or give them mathematics, or give them coloring books, and essentially inspiring them to think out of the box and inspiring them to form an identity of their own.
But that's human practice. I think that's more, and then you just, I think the community is just labeled under.
Yes, Satan, I mean, it's 100% a PR or a publicity statement in and of itself. But I mean, with the bad rep,
yeah, it comes comes the doing part.
Yeah, with the bad rep that Satanism essentially has received, I believe that it's necessary to show to individuals that we're not bad people. We're not out there to tyrannize or terrorize children. And there are a lot of people who still have reservations about the term cognitively, and that is unfortunately a product of, I would say, Christian indoctrination, who has created this preconceived narrative of evil in order to create a social psychological narrative of us and them. The old Calvinist idea that you have been chosen by God and that you are special, and that those people who are, for example, are not white, heterosexual, or, for example, normative, or speak the way you do, look the way you do, are essentially not part of your groupie, and therefore you are better than them.
Okay, but that is a very big, that's a very big generalization.
No, obviously, I'm merely underpinning the idea behind Calvinist theology in specification as the underpinning of Christian theology and the present zeitgeist, or the spirit of the times that is currently guiding Christianity and a lot of Christian factions.
I mean, the world is becoming far more
diverse.
Yeah?
Diverse.
Exactly. But there are a lot more non-believers from our side, I'm saying, than there are Christians. And you observe the world around you. You know that that is becoming more and more and more.
Absolutely.
And it's, I mean, it's definitely dominating.
I think in more developed countries, yes. In more first world countries. In South Africa, I think we have an issue. I think I researched statistics at some stage while presenting a conference paper at one of the South African Pagan Rights Alliance's, I think it was Heritage Day. We had a seminar and I did some research, and 87%, I think, of South Africa's population still identify with Christianity.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, I mean, if you just go on any Facebook group or drive around in South Africa, you'd see 3 or 4 churches in a 10-kilometer radius.
Yeah.
And, you know, billboards on the side of the road that promote Christian anecdotes from the Bible. And I think that in and of itself is resemblant of the fact that South Africa, for example, is a lot less diverse in terms of religiosity than it wants, you know, to let people believe.
Is it difficult to live amongst, like, a Christian-dominated population?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
In what way?
It's incredibly difficult. I mean, and I think a lot of pagans and a lot of people who are generally not just Satanists, but who don't conform to the Christo-normative theology experience immense difficulty. I mean, we're not just talking social marginalization. We are talking the fact that it's easier for you to get a job when you wear a cross around your neck as opposed to a pentacle or a pentagram, or the atoms symbolizing atheism per se. I mean, there's a lot more freedom on social media and, you know, a lot less frowned upon things where Christians can, for example, claim to be anti-LGBTQ publicly on social media and not have any economic or social implications as a result. There are relationships who thrive if you just identify as Christian and hide away your skepticism.
Yeah.
I mean, there are children who are disowned from their families if they just ask similar or simple questions such as, did the Exodus really happen, or was Noah's Ark truly real? So the oppression in a social and cultural sense and even economical is absolutely unrivaled. And I think it's it's something that a lot of people don't understand, and a lot of people tend to, when they hear this, they tend to, assume a sort of victim-shaming mentality of, oh no, you chose this label, and therefore you deserve to be sidelined. You chose this concept of adversariality, and
what do you deserve in in obviously reaction to that type of...
What do you mean?
In other words, I mean, they're saying to you, well, you deserve this type of treatment slash...
Well, I think it's the same as...
What did you say back?
I would say, as I said, it would be victim shaming. It would be telling, for example, a woman who was raped, you deserve that. Or, for example, what did you wear? Or what did you do to provoke?
I think it's a bit different.
No, I would say yes. It's completely contextually different. Yeah. But ideologically, it remains the same in the sense of that one victim, in both cases, people are... subject to, I would say, the epitome of injustice, and the aspect of having their human rights denied to them based on who they are.
Sure, I can understand that. Again, like you said, with the work, etc., opportunities, and also just plain old acceptance, right?
Precisely.
When we see the massive backlash, when there's a satanistic church that is being built in a community, like a suburban community, and there's this massive backlash, and that kind of like, so you're fighting for your rights to have a place to just go and be you.
Yes.
You know? What norms does the satanistic community stand by to say,
well, there was an attempt to formalize Satanism under the South African Satanic Church, but that in and of itself was I would 100% be comfortable to say that was a cult. And I was one of the pioneers of the organization, and I thought at the stage it would be a diversification of the religious demography of South Africa.
So what did these guys have you believe?
See, the individuals involved at first, I believe, were more, I'd say, using it as a vehicle to terrorize ideologically individuals and basically capitalize on the fears of individuals, which I do think
in what way?
In a certain, basically through employing certain rhetoric using things that there is a hidden council of individuals in power, and I'd say there were videos of the creator basically doing rituals on videos, which I think were superfluous and were unnecessary.
Who's the creator?
Rian Swichelaar, and he was later, quite prominent in the media for converting to Christianity, and basically it was just an entire, I think, employment of what I'd say a Kafkaesque, endeavor to create fear among individuals and capitalize on that fear to basically see whether that would change things. It's, I think, a reactionary response, what one would experience individually when you basically just recover from religious trauma. Mm. But I don't think it was necessarily a constructive approach in trying to, engage conversationally and diplomatically with other faiths and religions in South Africa and saying, listen, albeit we are different, we want to engage collaboratively and show some, a willingness to engage with individuals constructively instead of trying to use certain rhetoric and hidden phenomena and basically just explaining things as if there's some sort of mystery attached to all of it. I think it's...
When you say the hidden phenomena...
Well, yeah. Basically there was... I can't basically put my finger on it because the organization in and of itself was an ideological construct to begin with. It was just up in the air.
Yeah.
Titles were being used, individuals... There was there was not even an organizational structure. And the organization in and of itself was doomed to fail to begin with, but
titles like
Reverend, okay, and Church, you know. Yeah. I think it's superfluous to use such terms and it was, as I said, a deliberate antagonistic approach to the Christian religion, which I think is not constructive. I think in terms of engaging conversationally in individuals and trying to dissuade the minds of individuals, not trying to convert them, but merely trying to garner them a sort of understanding to who we are as individuals and what we stand for was completely missed. And we were fighting more, we were fighting off more bigotry and essentially more alienation than we were gaining grounds towards basically garnering, you know, people towards a cause. And
so, then, so when did you have conversations with these men, women about
frequently.
conflict with it? And what was, what
I didn't have. I don't think there was. There were really. I was too young to really understand it. But my perspectives now are rather in hindsight of my experience in the said organization. And now in hindsight, I realize what the organization was all about and what I was, you know, basically what I got myself into. And essentially, I did not have any conversations. I was ousted from the organization before I could even maintain a modicum of dissent or try to...
Why and how? I mean, how did they kick you out of a...
I have my own reservations about it, but I don't think that that's necessarily relevant. I just think that... I believe that people...
This is about your experience. So
yeah, well, I believe that in terms of my appreciation of people and my ideas behind it were sincere in terms of trying to not shock individuals. I think there's an... I believe that there's automatically a shock value attached to the idea of Satanism.
Follow us on Instagram at Chris Jordan Media or go to my landing page, chrisjordanmedia.net.